I think is so underestimated how powerful and expensive time freedom is. And yeah. what I mean by that is there's people that if I said, hey, do you want a job that's $100,000 a year? They'll take it. They'll go, yeah, totally. I go, yeah, but you have to work 60 hours a week. Fine. Whatever it is, it's 100 grand a year. Great. I go, or I can pay you 50 grand a year, but you have your own time freedom. And every entrepreneur will pick the 50 grand, every one of them. And everybody that's sort of still in what we might call the rat race would pick the 100 grand because it's because it says it's more money.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 119, with the host of the Solopreneur Hour, Michael O'Neill.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, friends and everybody else listening out there. Welcome back to the Angles of Latitude podcast. I'm your host, JC Preston, and playing co-host for the first time in this session is good friend Harrison Painter. If this is the first time you're listening in, this is the show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you do your life's work and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. Lots of great things happening this last week of March. Hard to believe it's already spring. In fact, we had one day this past week, we had 10 feet of snow or 10, no, not 10 feet of snow, 10 inches of snow. And it just it's all gone already because we're now sitting in days where it's like 50 degrees plus. And you know what that means is that those of us who are in the northern part of the United States, well, we're going to be a little bit more cheerful in our day-to-day activities. And as for me personally, you know, I look forward to warmer months because doing work around the house is one of, you know, my favorite ways to meditate and really just to get out of my own head. So yeah, anyway, that said, this is a great chat that Harrison and I have with our guest, Michael O'Neill. And if you're not familiar with Michael, he has a great podcast called The Solopreneur Hour. And in fact, his show, along with a few others, were what inspired me to do this particular show. So in our chat today with Michael, we'll be finding out all about how he got into podcasting, when he realized he was unemployable himself, and some of the things he's learned recently about the podcast industry that's changed how he does a few things on his own show. But before we get to that, I want to remind you guys about Millennial Skills and some of the things that Hector and his pals are doing over there. And you know, something that you guys might have been hearing that I've been learning about recently is chatbots for Facebook. And if you're not familiar with a chatbot, you know, it's basically an assistant program that will allow you to easily communicate with multiple people through Facebook Messenger. You send a message and then the recipient can select how to respond. Then based on that response, your bot will perform another action. Why is this important? Well, think about this. How often do you specifically check your email? I mean, if you're under 40, it's probably not that much. Maybe a couple times a day. You know, I think I check my email up to four times a day at max, usually twice a day. But now think how frequently you check Facebook or your favorite social media site. I'm guessing it's quite a bit more if you're in that under 40 demographic. So that said, which would you see yourself responding to sooner, a Facebook message or an email? You know, personally, I'd respond to a message through Messenger because I also have my text going through it. So anytime, you know, the Messenger does its ding, you know, I'm looking at my phone. So that being the case, when I heard about chatbots, I had to find out more. And soon I realized that the guest of Session 94, Hector Santiesteban, was giving out free training on how to use bots in the way that I wanted to. So I signed up for his bot, which would let me know when these free trainings were. If you don't want to miss out on the opportunity to get in on these trainings and update your marketing strategies for 2018, then all you have to do is go to newinceptions.com/Facebook chatbot. Through that, you'll be able to go over to the Millennial Skills bot directly and start to get an idea of what chatbots are and all about how powerful they can be and how they can help your marketing this year and into the future. So again, that's newinceptions.com/Facebook chatbot. And yeah, I'm sure you'll get a lot out of it like I have. Anyway, that said, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes or leave a comment in CastBox. And if you're not familiar with CastBox, it's a pretty good app for your Android phone to use to listen to podcasts. I recently started listening to it myself. And yeah, great application for free that you can use on your Android to stay up to date with all the podcasts that you might be listening to. Show notes and show note extras of this conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/119. And I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. And welcome back to the show. Hey everyone, JC Preston here with a not so new, but new to the show co-host, Harrison Painter. How you doing, man?
Life is good. Life is good.
Officially starting the Veteran Entrepreneurial Incubator. Sure, a lot of things going on with that.
We are accepting applications right now. Like right this second, people are applying.
Good stuff.
Isn't
and that cool? Yeah, I mean, I saw you post a little bit about that in the, what is it, the Vetrepreneur Tribe and getting the word out. So a lot of cool things going on with that. As you know, we have a lot of friends in the veteran world. So I'm glad that, you know, you guys are doing something local to, you know, help those veterans with their entrepreneurial path to get that going. But speaking of exciting things, I'm really excited to have today's guest on. And he's actually someone who I listened to quite a bit when I was binging on podcasts as a fan from 2013 to 2015 before I started this show. And his show is called The Solopreneur Hour. And, you know, the first time I heard him was on the Smart Passive Income podcast with Pat Flynn. And really, really cool talk if you're into podcasting and doing audio work. But since then, I've learned that he's, besides that, he's, you know, he's lived in every part of the country. He's also a big Porsche fan and, you know, does races with those from time to time. And like myself, has a fond love of dogs and a bit of a football fanatic, particularly the Steelers. And today we're talking with Michael O'Neill, who can be found all over the interwebs at Solo Power. Michael, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
JC, thanks for having me, man. It's been a mission for mine to get on the Angels of Latitude podcast, so I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. I love it.
By the way, couple things about Harrison. First of all, you've got the best name. Harrison Painter has to be one of the coolest names ever constructed. And
thank you very much.
Do you know that you sound a bit like Robert Heron? Has that been relayed to you ever?
I have never heard that.
Yeah.
No,
if you need to go find yourself a little video clip or audio clip of Robert Heron, who was one of the screensavers, one of the original, like literally one of the original podcasters with my buddy Patrick Norton. And you and Robert Heron are voice doppelgangers.
I love it.
Yeah.
I will check that out.
Yeah. Anyway, what's up, fellas? And of course, I know it's angles, but
yeah, you want to see that again?
No, I don't. Okay. Because I said, no, that was on purpose because up until 30 minutes before we recorded, I was like, oh, this is cool. Angels of Latitude. I wonder what that means.
Angels of Attitude.
Yeah. All of it. Yeah. So yeah, exactly. Welcome to Angels of Attitude.
You're originally from the Midwest. I mean, how did you end up as a Steelers fan? I mean, isn't that like almost sacrilegious to
no I live 3 hours from Pittsburgh. That was not at all. I was so in Ohio.
You were on that side of the okay got
yeah
it.
I was in Ohio. I was a little kid and I came from this family that no one what's the well no one cared I was gonna say what's mm-hmm. the PG rating of this podcast But no one cared at all about football at all. And no one ever did. It was not a thing in my family. But when I was like 4, I started drawing Steelers helmets on.
Really?
Yeah, I still have the drawings from just around, you know, like on little notebooks and things. In my mom's journal, I was writing Steelers helmets. And I just became a fan as a little kid. And oddly enough, I became this big Steelers fan. My brother became a big Seattle Seahawks fan. For no reason. This is the 70s. And we just chose teams that had nothing to do with the Bengals or Browns or the Lions, which were the three close teams. And thank God we did that.
Well, what would you have drawn if for Cleveland, right? Just brown circles?
Yeah, just an orange thing. But I remember I had this Christmas early on. I think I was probably 6. And the rest of the family got it. I got a Steelers trash can and I got a Steelers hat and like one of those silky kind of jackets, the NFL jackets that were kind of smooth and silky.
Oh, I remember those.
And then my grandma got me a Bengals robe and I had to wear it for a picture. And I'm like holding all my Steelers stuff, wearing this orange Bengals robe going, what did you do? So yeah, I didn't keep any of that stuff, but I'll tell you, when I turned 40, my awesome brother got me a trash can that was circa 70s. That was just like the one I was holding up in the picture, which is here right now in Studio 86, named after legendary Steelers player Hines Ward, number 86.
Mm. And and since then, you've actually been on the show with him, which is kind of one of your bucket list sort of things, right?
Saying I was on the show with him maybe isn't quite the whole story. I co-hosted the show with him for a year. It was my show, really. Actually, what it was, if you listen to it, it was the Solopreneur Hour with Hines Ward talking football.
How cool is that?
Because I did, because he wasn't a broadcaster, so I had to kind of do the heavy lifting. It was cool. It was interesting. Certainly more access to, you know, a lot of bigger names than I would get on the Solopreneur Hour. Like, I still have a screenshot of Snoop Dogg tweeting me, DMing me about recording a show. And I'm like, all right, that's kind of cool. it was being a Steelers fan and having, like, episode one, as I'm looking at my computer screen and it's Hines Ward on the left, sitting next to Jerome Bettis on the right, and getting a chance to talk literally to my two favorite Steelers of all time. I had to kind of look away and go, what on earth am I doing right now? That is crazy. So yeah, anyway, it was cool. And I did it for a year and I lived a Steelers fan dream season, having gone to games and was in the, you know, in the belly of the stadiums. And I got to go to the Super Bowl media day and just really kind of dig the whole thing. And it was awesome. But it was time for me to walk away after a year because I was doing 95% of everything. So, you know. But I will say, from a podcasting standpoint, I'm such a firm believer in doing whatever the pros are doing. Because that's how I started. When I started the show, I was like, what gear do I get? And I go, well, what are the guys in radio doing? Like, there's precedent for what we do here, talking into a mic and broadcasting it. So what are the people been doing forever? And so when I walked into the Super Bowl, I said, all right, it's media day. This is 250 radio stations from all over the world, media outlets. I'm going to keep my mind open, but I'm going to do everything that they're doing. And my goal when I first started the show was, I don't want the gear to be an excuse. You know, if the show sucked, it was my fault, not the gear's fault. So I'm just going to take the gear out of the equation and do whatever they did. So I always started with a real XLR microphone into a mixer, into a recorder. That's how I started, because I thought that's what people were using. And when I went to the Super Bowl, that was still 96% of the building was a microphone going into a small mixer into like a Zoom or Tascam recorder.
Right.
And that was the deal. So I'm still, you know, I always like to say I believe in the Foo Fighters and I believe in, you know, Aerosmith. I'm not going software recording, even though I believe right this second, because of some technical glitches, we're software recording.
That's right.
So
that's
here
right.
We are. But I'm hardware recording on my end. So if a nuclear bomb hits or we drop, I'm still recording. So I'll hold the show up on my end.
Good deal. Good deal. So like Harrison and I, you originally started your career working on web pages and eventually you realized that, you know, that wasn't really your true calling. Tell us about the moment that you realized that you were unemployable. You know, for me, I learned the truth through Amway. And I know that you have a network marketing experience. So that was that kind of a role in that at all? Or how did you see the light?
So I was a web guy from 94 until 2009, I think. That was like pretty full time. And somewhere around 2000, I left. I was doing a lot of agency work. I left that world and started freelancing in the early aughts. And 2004, I got recruited by this startup, this like high Fortune 500 kind of startup deal. And they essentially recruited me off the couch because I was not that interested in working for anybody. But the offer was crazy and it seemed like a cool place to work. And it was. I was employee number 60.
Mm, wow.
Yeah. And then they had an investment of $110 million while, you know, 3 months into me being there, and everything changed. So it turned into this like full corporate kind of vibe. And it wasn't that fun anymore. And I realized at the time I'd already started reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad and kind of seeing where the, seeing that there was a different way to do this. And I'll tell you that the thing that pinched the most was that the time freedom went away. And the time freedom was, I think, is so underestimated how powerful and expensive time freedom is. And what I mean by that is there's people that if I said, hey, do you want a job that's $100,000 a year? They'll take it. They'll go, yeah, totally. I go, yeah, but you have to work 60 hours a week. Fine. Whatever it is, it's $100,000 a year. Great. I go, or I can pay you $50,000 a year, but you have your own time freedom. And every entrepreneur will pick the $50,000, every one of them. And everybody that's sort of still in what we might call the rat race would pick the $100,000 because it says it's more money.
Right.
But your life is so radically different when you don't have to go to work 9 to 5. And there are so many things you can say yes to that you're not allowed to say yes to without, you know, checking with your 2 weeks of vacation that you get. And it, you know, in terms of the tiers, you know, if I look at time freedom, location freedom, financial freedom, it's the easiest one to get of the three. You just tell your boss to go F off and then you got time freedom. it's a little more challenging to get the other two, but that one is fairly easy to obtain. It's just working out the rest of your life after you've done that.
So how did you realize that you were, you know, like that designing websites, I mean, wasn't your thing? I mean, how did you get into eventually internet marketing?
When I was at that company, I realized about halfway through, I'm like, man, this is not for me. I have this middle manager who doesn't know as much as I do, that's giving me orders. I'm not a good order taker. I realized at some point halfway through that I was completely unemployable. And we each lasted a year with each other. And then I had this big, the epiphany, which is, this is one of the bummer things about life. Life is very relentless. So the minute you think something is, you know, you're bummed out and life is going badly, it serves you up a giant steaming plate of dog do. And you go, oh, boy, do I wish that it was the previous iteration of life. Because right now it really sucks. Because it's just relentless, you know? And so that's kind of what happened, is that my dad died. And then soon after, my mom died. It was a big surprise when my mom died. And this is just a few months later. And it really wrecked me on a lot of levels, as you might assume. And I decided to mourn them and to honor them. I always wanted to take them to Europe when I was a quote-unquote successful adult. And then they passed away, so I couldn't really do that. But I decided, I got a little Italian Parmesan cheese shaker. We're a funny family. And I put their ashes in it, and I decided I'm going to take them to Europe. And so I went for 4 months, and I spread them everywhere I want. They're on the beaches of Normandy, and they're in the Sistine Chapel. And like sometimes I had to go a little Shawshank Redemption with it, because you're not allowed to spread ashes in the Sistine Chapel. But it was this amazing cathartic time for me. And when I got back, I had $14. And not like, hey, I better go hit the ATM. But I literally, at the, you know, mid-30s, late-30s, I had $14 and I was like, what do I want to do now? And it was like, I don't know what I want to do, but I know what I don't want to do is ever work a dollar for an hour ever again. So I decided not to. And that was a hard decision I made. And, you know, I did a few freelance web gigs, and then I found the network marketing world, which really gave me a community and a exposure to entrepreneurs that I had never been around before. Because you look at these really successful people in the network marketing world, not only are they would be baller in any kind of company, like any kind of corporation, but they're also way more willing to share their time and their expertise because that's how their business gets built.
Exactly.
So I love that as a proving ground for entrepreneurs. And for me, you know, being with that company for 3 years, I'm more than that. I had a shake of theirs. This is nine years later now, for breakfast today. But I realized that those people and the people I met around them are people that I wanted to learn more from. And it's essentially how I decided to form the Solopreneur Hour, because I wanted to get to know those people a little more, and I wanted an excuse to talk to them.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my early guests, in fact, on my show was one of the guys that he wasn't a direct upline or emerald for me, but you know, having him on was like, it was like, it's cool. So no, I know the feeling quite a bit.
Plus you get so much personal development, which I needed. I needed community. Yeah. I needed personal development. You know, any good company, they say it's like a, you know, personal development company with a compensation plan. And I do think that that's true.
I think all kids, young folks should go through that industry at least once, at least for a year. I think you learn so much more in that world than you do even in business school, right? Especially when you're just coming out, say in that 18 to 22 set. Because you do, you get the leadership training, you get used to hearing the word no, right? And you understand how hard it really is to be an entrepreneur as well, right? That it's not super easy, and it gives you all the tools to get through that.
Yeah, certainly creating systems and learning some sales and, you know, batting down the phones and all the things you need to do to be successful in that world. I was very good at social media, which is how I sort of rose in that company. And at the time, that was an anomaly. It was a very baby boomer industry in 2009. So some younger dude walking in and having a bunch of social media experience and then killing it was a big deal. So.
Well, let's talk about that Solopreneur Hour podcast that you have. Let me ask you this. So why a podcast? What was the attraction to that channel, that medium?
It's a good question. I've been a fan since the Ricky Gervais, you know, and tech TV days. So what was that, 2004, 2006? So I'd always sort of been in that. I always enjoyed it. And within the company I'm with is called Isagenix. So within that company, there was a personal development, like their lead of personal development, this guy called David Wood. And he's known as David T.S. Wood now, because there's another David Wood in the network marketing industry that's kind of a sleazeball. But anyway, I've seen him speak in front of like 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. And you could hear a pin drop. He was an amazing speaker. And I just said, he came to me one day with a social media question. I go, David, I'll answer your YouTube question, but we should really think about growing your brand. And he goes, how do we do that? I go, what about a podcast? And he's like, well, what's a podcast? Because I knew he would be good. I said, well, it's like a radio show you download, you know? And he said, all right. And so I launched this thing called The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. And that was really my first foray. I did everything behind the scenes. I'm a drummer. So I'm used to sort of being behind the scenes a little bit. And the show became a big success. We were getting, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 downloads a day. And it turned into a really great show and platform and brand. And I think I saw the power of it there. And what happened was he was climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, as you do. And we needed a Thursday show. And so I jumped on and I did a 45-minute show on using social media to grow your solopreneur business or network. I don't remember what I used, maybe solopreneur business, maybe network marketing. But I did a show on that and I found it to be super comfortable and natural. And then I started getting emails and people that are like, you should do that. That should be a thing you do. So that planted the seed of like, oh, maybe I should do a podcast. And then I had lunch with Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income here in San Diego. And we just hung out for 2 hours and just chatted and talked about girls and cars and fashion and, you know, guy things too. And he was leaving. He was literally in the doorway and he stopped. He goes, dude, thank you. I never get to do that. And I go, what are you talking about? And he goes, every time I have a conversation, it's about SPI. So I never get to really talk. And I go, wouldn't that be an interesting idea for a show? Like, what if I brought people on and talked about the rest of their life? And we would learn the lessons, but without being so like, give me 10 tips for blogging.
Right.
So that really became the essence of the show. And then I launched August 23rd, 2013. And that was just very close to 10 million downloads ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So here we are. Here we are on the pods.
And I have to ask you a question. Three times a week, correct?
I do, yeah. And I do another one too. So I have two shows currently.
There's a lot of work involved with that. So what's your process look like in order to be able to not only connect with the influencers, right? To bring on guests, to create the content, to produce the entire show as a whole, and then to distribute it properly. You've got to have some type of a process that helps with that. Could you share at least a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally on cruise control now. I'm, you know, whatever I am, 675 episodes in or something, just with this show. So the thing I said before about the hardware makes a gigantic difference in post-production, because there almost is no post-production. It takes me literally, I could, if we record this show right now, I could pop the thing out. It could be live probably in 15 minutes, maybe less. Because it takes me less than probably 3 minutes in my audio editing software, because it's already perfect. The audio is already perfect going into the software, so I don't have to mess with anything. And I do a show that I consider like almost like a 60s live to tape. So I never do edits in my show. So it's live essentially, which again puts all the onus on me to be a good host and not blow it. So I do that to myself on purpose. Like I'm live without a net, which is, I cannot tell you how it has prepared me to do, you know, like live interviews from stage or public speaking or things like that. It's made it so much easier for me, because this is all I'm ever used to. I've done it literally 1,000 times now between probably 3 different shows. So the process is pretty simple workflow now. I record to an SD card that comes out of my Zoom H6 recorder, pop it in, throw it into GarageBand. My GarageBand already has the intro and outro already there, and all my little bumpers like, hey, this is blah, 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 and you're listening to. So all I got to do is move things around a little bit and then hit export. And then while I'm doing that, I've realized over the last 6 months, 8 months, that the show notes thing doesn't make a huge difference. I was paying for somebody to do show notes for 2 or 3 years. And ever since I stopped doing that, I've literally never had anybody go, man, I wish you had richer show notes. Or I've never seen a drop or like a dip in downloads, because I haven't had it. So I realized, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go the Bill Burr approach and be like, Bill talks to Bob today on today's show. And that's kind of what it's been. So
but what about the SEO impact of not having show notes? Have you been able to look at any of those metrics and see if there's been, you know, any drop in the search based on that?
I haven't seen anything in my Google Analytics. But I will tell you, I just went to, there was this show conference called Podfest that I spoke at a couple of weeks ago, and Rob Walsh from Libsyn was there, and he gave some stats about podcasting, which I thought was kind of cool. Number one, that one of the myths of the podcasting is the ideal length of an episode is 22 minutes. So the top 200 shows on iTunes, 8.1% are 22 minutes or shorter. 69% are 44 minutes or longer, and about 8.1% are 120 minutes or longer. So the sweet spot is somewhere between 45 minutes and an hour and a half for a show. But this one I thought was pretty interesting, which was the consumption of podcasts is It's 82% smartphone now, so only 18% on the computer. And the huge lion's share, almost 80% of the podcast traffic comes from the Apple Podcasts app. So, yeah. And so everything else is tiny, except Spotify now has 5%. Wow. So the Libsyn app, like the one where it's kind of, you know, integrated, is less than 11%, which means that less than 11% of people are actually going to your website to listen or to pay much attention to it. Now, it's different if you have an opt-in and you're sending people there and you have other things on your website. So if I have like regular blog posts, for instance, with Beginner Audiophile, I have all these reviews that I'm starting to compile of all this different gear that we're reviewing on the show. It's a hobby of mine that I started a show about a year ago. And that is going to be different. Like that one, I'm actually doing much more deeper show notes, deeper SEO, things like that. But in general, you're putting content out there and most people are consuming it like right to your phone. They're never even getting to your website.
Well, I think it's important to point out a few of the things that you just said for any of the younger listeners or anybody that wants to get into podcasting, right? Number one, the gear you're using is not outrageously expensive.
No, $69 gets you a Audio-Technica ATR2100 microphone. You can plug it right in and you're pretty much good to go with that.
So we've got that, and we've got the fact that you don't need to take the time or expense in massive amounts of show notes, which I know is a lot of time for a lot of people, right? So you can jump right in there, you can connect with people, and you can start a podcast literally tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, and editing, the editing part, I hear people that are like, I'm just gonna spend 4 hours per show. I'm like, what are you doing to yourself? Nobody cares if you say, they really don't. So, I mean, and you can cure that, by the way. If you're an and an ah-er, and I think we all do that in some ways, you just make yourself a little sticky note and put it on your monitor and just write and just stick it right in the middle while you're doing an interview. And you're going to be thinking, stop saying Just pause instead, you know?
But there's one thing that technology cannot do for you, and that's become a great interviewer. So you actually offer a course, The Art of the Interview. Let's talk a little bit about that. Share with us more about the course itself, what it can do for somebody, and also maybe offer one tip that's in this that you wish you would have known back when you got started.
So this was a very challenging request to fulfill. And what I mean by that is it turned out that one of my stupid human tricks is giving really good interviews. And a lot of people that, you know, we follow would have a new thing and go, hey, you know, can I be on your show? Because you bring out the best part of me when they're talking. And I thought, well, that's a huge compliment. Thank you. Yeah. But then I would have a bunch of people that said, hey, can you teach me to interview better? And I kept going, I don't know how I can teach people to have a better conversation. It's not an easy thing to do. But eventually I figured out what I was doing and how I could deconstruct it. And it happened because I was at a happy hour with a friend of mine, and she had brought a friend, and my friend had gone to the restroom and then got into a conversation with somebody on the way back. So I'm just sitting here by myself with this girl that I don't know, which has happened to me, you know, 57 billion times in my life. And I was having the worst small talky, awful, awkward conversation with this girl. And I was just sitting there in this weird discomfort. And then I snapped into consciousness and I was like, wait a second. At the time, I'd probably done 150 of the Solopreneur Hour. I'm like, why is it that I can be in front of a microphone and I would literally have no problem? If there was a recorder going, I could easily do an hour with this girl and I would never even think about it. It would be simple. So what's the disconnect? So what I did is I switched the microphone on in my brain. And from that point, we had a great, interesting conversation. So part of it, and probably a huge part of it, by the way, was the thing that we have innately, which is we want to tell people all the cool stuff that we're doing, especially when we're just meeting them, because we want them to know how much social value we have. And the real trick to being a great interviewer is to be interested and not interesting. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, the conversation completely opens up. You're hoping just to seed the conversation with that person and let them open up and share with you. And it's always a fun challenge for me when somebody's kind of a jerk and I go, all right, let me see if I can get them to talk to me. Like, what angle can I take to get them to talk to me? And sometimes what I realize is that not only will you be better on a microphone, but you'll be better in real life. Like, if you take this course, you'll be truly a better conversationalist in the real world. And I think that's something that I didn't realize until after, that this is helping people just talk to other humans. You were still having some techie difficulties while Harrison and I were talking about this, but I'm one of those people that believes that you can't think about how you learned in high school or, you know, grade school. The lessons you remember weren't because that teacher was really good at teaching algebra. You remember them because that teacher was entertaining and they made you want to learn and listen. I don't believe anything can happen in the online internet marketing, podcasting, live streaming, YouTube space without entertainment being the number one priority. Hmm. Like, I don't want to hear value, because there's no value when somebody's sleeping. So like, if you're not entertaining, they're not going to listen to the words you say that will give them value. Hmm. So I'm very much a proponent of stretching out. And, you know, again, we were chatting about this beforehand. I barely ever listen to entrepreneurial content unless it's a book that I'm listening to. I almost always listen and watch stand-up comedy, because no one's better with moving a crowd through an energy than a stand-up comic. So I really deconstruct kind of what they're doing, not only on the microphone, but with their body language and how they're narrating through a particular premise. That's all the stuff we can learn as interviewers to be better on a microphone. So it might've been a little longer, a deeper, I've never been accused of brevity, JC. So the bottom line is, from a tip standpoint, if you are maybe kind of shy or you don't know what to say to someone, there's a great little technique called the form technique, which is FORM. And that stands for family, occupation, recreation, motivation.
Motivation. I'm familiar with being your message. I'm curious, what's the motivation part?
Well, so those are things that people love to talk about first and foremost. They love to talk about their family. It's easy to weave through this thing. Like, try it when you're in the next Uber you take. So it's FORM. Just be like, hey, you know, whatever your name is. Where'd you come from? You know, where do you live? Oh, well, I live here in San Diego. Cool. Is your whole family here? Like, oh, no, we moved from Ethiopia when I was 11. This was last night. I had this conversation with this guy. Oh, cool. And you know, what did you do? What were you doing in Ethiopia? It's like, oh, I was doing this. And then, you know, now I do this in addition. So now we've covered family and occupation. And then, wow, you got four kids. What are you doing with them? Do you take them to Disney World or Disneyland or whatever? Legoland? He's like, yeah, we do this. We go to the park. And I go, why? Like, what are you doing this for? Why are you doing this? People love to explain what their why is. And that's the motivation side. So it's an easy template at any networking event, any podcast you do, any Uber ride, any conversation at a bar that you can take. And it gives you just something to lean on when you're like, I have no idea what to say to this person right now, which is what we all feel, I think. You know, it's just an innate, like, that between that and the everybody's waiting for somebody else to go first at everything. You know, so if you can be that person to go first, it's like, it can really be a life changer. So it's things like that. We talked a bit about, like, if you're a podcaster, there's a couple of really real quickies. Is first the art of the intro. You know, too often I hear on podcasts where somebody will be like, well, you know, Michael, I know you're a web guy and then you did this thing. Why don't you tell the rest of the story? And you're like, dude, if you think about this from a technical standpoint, you being the host of the podcast, you know your audience intimately. You know exactly how they like to hear what you're trying to transfer to them. You are literally the Rosetta Stone I guess not literally, but you are essentially the Rosetta Stone of this show. And now you're handing the reins of your show to a brand new person that doesn't know anything about your audience at all and going like, here, your show now, your floor, which is such a weird move because you'd never do it anywhere else. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd never, like if you were hosting a live show and you brought some stranger on stage, you wouldn't just like hand the mic and go, all right, let me know when you're done. You would never do that. But we do it all the time in podcasting, which is such a weird move.
Right, right, right. So a lot of cool things that you got going on in your course. I mean, it sounds like you're full of all kinds of tips. And if people want a preview of that, I would highly recommend going back to the SPI interview that you did with Pat, because I mean, some of the tactics or tips that you left in there, I'm sure are in your course.
Yeah, that predated the course, but it was definitely instrumental in forming it. I got so much feedback from that I was like, man, I should just do this. I will share one thing before we roll, because no one else has done it as far as I know. I had a really terrible interview with Michael Gerber, who wrote The E-Myth Revisited. And apparently my interview is not, that's not uncommon. Apparently he's had a few of those. But I did a Mystery Science Theater 3000, like director's overdub of that interview within the course. So you can actually hear what I was going for and then hear how he responded and then hear like what was going on in my brain as I set up the next question and what it was like, what the turmoil was as I was interviewing this really difficult interview. And between that and the fact that the course is set up with audio, video, and an ebook. So it's a totally separate podcast version of the course that's not just extracted audio, but I recorded a separate podcast version, did a video version, and did a completely separate ebook version that I wrote. So you can consume it any way that's great for you.
Awesome. Awesome. So real quick, before we do get to the rapid fires, any current, future, and things that you're looking forward to?
Yeah. You know, like within the year kind of thing, I've got a bunch of speaking gigs, but the thing that I'm really excited about right now is I launched this other show called Beginner Audiophile, which is just a hobby podcast. That's been about a year now, and it's gotten to this point that I didn't expect, which is I may be able to monetize this to six figures this year, which it was completely, this was just about free gear. I just wanted to get gear so I could play with it. But I realized that I had applied the same template of launching this show as I have for these other half a dozen super successful podcasts. And that has become the training, which is like this podcast launch. So one of the things I've been doing over the last few months is helping people launch super successful podcasts. Awesome. Yeah, it's been a thing that I'm able to sort of apply this template to it. And it's so far so good. I've had literally millions of downloads and millions of dollars from podcast launches, and they all basically follow the same template. So that's what I spoke about at PodFest, and that's what I'm speaking about at Social Media Marketing World.
Awesome. Awesome. So rapid fire questions. What are three influencers or teachers that have launched you to where you're at today?
Howard Stern, David Wood, and Sam Jones, a guy who has a podcast called Off Camera with Sam Jones. Those are probably all the stand-ups I've listened to over the last few years. But certainly Howard was probably the number one influence for sure.
Love it.
Yeah.
In the last several years, here's something. So for me, my New Year's resolution here for 2018 was to learn how to say no more. I don't say no enough. So let me ask you, do you say no? How do you do it? How do you get the discipline to make that happen? Because a guy like you, I'm sure, gets bombarded all of the time with opportunity.
Very interesting bringing that up with me, because my philosophy now is almost exactly the opposite. I'm almost Jim Carrey. I say yes to, here's why. I'll give you the caveat to this is I say yes to almost everything I can, everything I can fit in. Because if I had to identify one single trait of the most successful people that I've interviewed now, over 1,000 of them, it's that they say yes first and then figure out the details later. Whereas most average people say maybe, and they think of 10 reasons why they can't do something. Mm-hmm. So because almost everything I've done, especially when it's event related, where I end up at an event, is because I meet people there. So I say yes and figure out how to get to the event. And then some amazing thing happens in my career. So yeah, that's happened a bunch.
Cool. Awesome. What's something that you've been learning about recently that you're excited to implement?
What have I been? Oh, automation has been really cool. Like with Acuity and Zapier and Trello. That's something I'm working on. I'm maybe trying to work on a little training around that sometime in maybe Q2. But I've got some really cool stuff that literally if you drag something in Trello, like all hell breaks loose and emails get sent and social media posts happen and it's a really cool zap. So, but it was complicated. It took me like 3 days to figure it out. But I think those kinds of things I really nerd out about those for sure.
What's your least favorite social custom?
Other than small talk, which I think is the worst. What is my least favorite? I don't know if there's anything other than small talk. Just weird conversations at social functions.
And the last one is, what's the secret to achieving personal freedom?
That you understand that your life is 100% everything. Everything good and bad that happens in your life is 100% your responsibility. So if you feel like you are working too much or you don't love where you live or you don't love the partner you're with, that you are 100% responsible for changing that. Nobody else is. So that freedom of accepting that fact and realizing that, hey man, there's every time somebody says something that's kind of an excuse, I go, dude, guy with no arms and no legs climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. So what do you got to say? You know,
exactly.
That's kind of where I land on that.
So true.
Yeah.
So again, people can find you at the Solopreneur Hour, correct?
Solo Hour on all the socials, because no one can spell preneur.
Okay. Gotcha. And really appreciate you being on the show and taking some time with us.
You are a rock star, brother.
Thanks, man. It's been super fun. Thanks for having me. And I do, as you know, I got to bounce. Yep, so sure. I appreciate it. And, you guys keep on rocking out there in listener land.
Well, there you have it, gang. I hope you enjoyed that awesome chat with Michael. And a big thanks to him for taking some time to join us for this session. It was really great to finally actually spend some time with him and, you know, learn some things that he got from recent conferences. PodFest sounds like one that I'll be definitely wanting to attend in the future. In today's show note extras, which again can be found at newinceptions.com/119, I have a mixture of Michael's work, and the first two videos are of him doing something that is, I would say, a unique skill in the entrepreneurial information space. He's a drummer, and Michael is pretty great at it, I gotta say, and in fact, has, if I'm not mistaken, drummed in multiple conferences. Next after that are two of my favorite interviews he's done with the Solopreneur Hour. One was with Pat Flynn when he was promoting his book, Will It Fly? There was a ton of takeaways in that conversation. And I'm going to make sure that I say that this isn't the interview that Michael did on SPI. This was at least a year or so after that conversation. But I'll be sure to link that interview in the show notes as well. The other interview that is part of the show note extras is with Hines Ward. And as someone who follows the NFL regularly, I always thought Hines, you know, was just a great, classy dude. And in that interview, you'll find out what motivated him to push himself to be as great as he is. Obviously, there are other interviews that I could be pointing out, but I think that 2-hour-long sessions would be a good start for you. So check those out in the show note extras found at newinceptions.com/119. In the next episode, session 120, I'll be joined by guest co-host David Anderson. David, you might remember from a session 92 where I first learned how he employs a personal mission as his compass to be
all that he can on a day-to-day basis. We'll be joined by guest Dave Sanderson, who happens to be one of the survivors of the Miracle on the Hudson. You know, that was the jet crash that Tom Hanks's movie Sully was about. In our conversation, we learn how Dave was able to take leadership in the moment and how that's propelled him to pursue a speaking career to help others do the same thing. So stay tuned for that one coming out in a couple of weeks. So that's it for session 119. Again, don't miss out on starting your chatbot training today. Get started by visiting newinceptions.com/Facebook chatbot. And when Hector does his next training, you'll certainly be notified. That said, thanks again for joining Harrison, Michael, and myself today. Until next session, gang, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating. And I'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.